Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy.
He's Andrew on the board. So as he gets my volume up here a little bit, we have Kevin with us. The S&P futures are up 10. NASDAQ futures are up 35. We looks like we're having a positive morning again here, which we seem to be having a lot lately, and might be able to dig out a reason for that. Not a bad reason, just a reason. You're free to determine yourself whether it's a good reason or a bad reason, but a reason nonetheless. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Yeah.
How are you, bud?
I'm doing all right.
I'm just dodging the convention stuff, you know, since I'm not really invited to anything. I managed to not be invited to the big salt shed party that Pritzker was hosting. I think that was last night. I'm not positive it was last night.
They have some live entertainment for that?
Yeah, somebody really good. I forgot the name. I will dig it up. I will dig that up. But yeah, it was the somebody you'd recognize. I'll just Google Salt Shed Party. What do you think? Salt Shed Party that I was not invited to. You think it'll come up on Google?
Yeah, just Google, where's my invitation?
Yeah. But they have already set that up yesterday. And I'm kind of curious as to what they did with there's a whole bunch of migrants that are across the street. And so, I mean, I'm wondering if they gave those guys like $200 to go to dinner for the night or what. Anyway, there was a rally outside it last night. A John Legend.
I could have missed that happily.
Well, he's pretty big for a private party.
Yeah, he's a name. He's a name. But
well, I'm sure I see a bunch of police and everybody protecting the party. And well, there you go. I'm pleased to know that we actually do have police. So this morning, of course, there's two cars with all the lights on, state police guarding the private roadway for all these guys. Because they opened up, for those that don't know, the Kennedy Expressway in Chicago has been an absolute goat bleep for the last... last year it was shut down. It's four lanes each way, and it has a reversible two lanes in the middle. So last year they shut down one side of the four lanes. Now we're talking about 6-7 month shutdown. It is the absolute main arterial drag of the city. And you think they would work two shifts, you think it'd work weekends, nah, nothing like that. You think it'd look like a lot of guys working on it, nah, nothing like that. So it took like forever to do the one side, while the inside was, the express lanes were being used only one way. Well, now the express lanes are being done this year. So it's just four lanes back and forth and not six for the direction you need it. So they reopened them this week, which of course is gonna probably cause a delay in everybody else. They're open just for the people at convention, buses that go back and forth, and they have police at each end with the stuff flaring to make sure that nobody gets in there except like the real people. So there you go. It's just one of those things, Kevin. You know, then you have the mayor running around, and granted, there's people. As bad as things are getting here. What can I say, Kevin? I still love the place, and it's been my home for a long time, and I think maybe till the end, we'll see. Although, I don't know. I'm just beginning to wonder what in God's name, you know, we're doing with this stuff. I mean, I really don't know. I don't know where we're headed. I know we're going there pretty fast, and the mayor's running around telling everybody how the entire city is benefiting from this. And I'm thinking, I don't know about that. I think, now do I want the hotels filled after the COVID stuff and how so many of them are hurting? Yeah. Do I want the bars on Randolph and those places making money? Sure I do. But downtown, there's nobody here. There's like nobody here. I mean, last night when I left at 4 o'clock to go home or 4:15, there couldn't have been two cars in my lot. There's nobody on the streets here. I'm going to say that. Yeah.
So all you've done is squeeze the balloon and the air's moved over somewhere else.
But as long as you're in the direction that the air is moving, you always feel like everybody's partying, aren't they? Well, not exactly. Right? I mean, it's like the lady who wrote the article at 50.
Come on, Tom. I'm sure you were at multiple convention parties last night, and as you moved from tavern to tavern, everybody was there cheering the speeches.
Oh, without a doubt. And
that or they were watching the Cubs game. I'm not sure which.
I will say this, that I did go to the one in 96 and it was pretty cool. Talk about a spot, a play. You would never guess one of these conventions is the absolute epicenter of the haves and the have-nots. We're just regular delegates, or just, I guess they might get free hot dogs, I don't know about beer, and all the rest of the people, there's every lobbyist is there, every big law firm is there with their tents and their private boxes and all the stuff. I wonder if you had a box. If you had a box for the Bulls and the Hawks, if you have to give up your box or you get to rent it out, or how do you suppose that works?
Oh, I would fully imagine that you just have to give it up.
Probably. This will be considered like a once-in-a-lifetime event. There's probably something in the contract that if it's like really, really unusual.
I am sure there is, yeah.
Or
maybe you have the right to buy your box and be at the convention, but you know, it's going to cost you about $6 million or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to let a regular schmo in there.
There's ways around this.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to let a regular schmo just go into his box to watch the thing. I can't imagine that. Well, here I am. We just drove right by this, the salt shed, and here's some protesters and all the police. I didn't know the police had any bicycles anymore. But they're all back. They got the bicycles.
A lot of police there, though?
Oh, yeah. It was a huge... Totally ringed by police.
The VP was in Milwaukee yesterday saying that it's outdated, wrong, and backward to think that more police creates more safety.
Well, it depends on if it's you or somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, I, as I listen to the politics, I keep thinking back to Sammy Sosa's interview in front of Congress. and I think that the older I get, Kevin, the more I'm convinced that a lie of omission is more dangerous than a lie of commission. I mean, just not giving the whole story and just giving a little piece of it is actually more dangerous than a flat-ass lie in some ways. I listened to two creatures yesterday. One creature was the VP candidate for the Republican Party, talking about when Donald Trump, the greatest president ever, left office, the CPI, the inflation rate was 1.4%. I'm sitting there going, then the lady from who's the head of the Democratic National Committee, the dark-haired lady, comes out and says, she was being interviewed on CNBC, and I said, what are you going to do about all these deficits? Well, I can't believe you like asked that question. You realize how much the deficit is down since Biden's been in office? And I'm going, all right, wait.
No, it's not.
the yearly is, but the first year was a COVID year. So that's an insane comment. Just like the other guy, the last year Trump was in there, and again, the Democrats probably done the same thing, put 40% into the money supply, and since our CPI is so balled up, he escaped like 1 month before the stuff started to ratchet up. So, okay, the CPI...
It was actually a little bit later before it started to ratchet up.
But I'm saying it's all because of the... Because of this, the CPI stuff. But if you actually look at the last year he was there, which is 2020, the CPI is considered 1.4%. Well, okay. I'm going to be a jockey in the seventh race today, too, right? Now, the point with the budget deficit, as you and I both know, is now things are supposed to be good again, and we still got a 40% budget deficit or 35. That's a massive problem. But now, is it less than the year he walked in? Yeah. But, and I guess you can keep saying that, but it's not really the story, is it?
Well, it's not, and And the problem always, you know, what did we say at the time? The economy's recovering as we got in there. Will there be inflation? Yeah, can't help but be inflation. All they needed to do was let things unfold and take credit for it. You say, yep, the economy's back on its feet. People are going back to work. Businesses are open now. All they had to do was just nothing and take credit for it. And it would have been great politics. What'd they do? Hey, another American Rescue Plan, an infrastructure bill that was not about the current infrastructure, was all about the environmental stuff, the Green New Deal stuff. So they did that, and then they followed that up with the Inflation Reduction Act, and it seems to me there's one more that I'm missing. And so that just piled onto it. And so, yeah, don't look at me and tell me that that your deficit is all better. You're piling on, and we haven't even begun to realize some of it.
Kevin, did I send you that article? I had it up here, and then I couldn't find it yesterday because we were doing so much trading at the end of the day yesterday with the gold and everything moving. We actually had a real nice week for our clients, better than usual. I mean, there was an article regarding the inflation, you know, this infrastructure bill, and how in some of these smaller communities that it is, according to the article, it has really helped a lot of small manufacturing places in rural America. That this, not so much in the big cities, but a lot of people in rural America, a lot of small companies, a lot of small factories are kicking up. In your area where they are smaller, do you know of anybody who's got a start or got financing or anything from either one of those two bills?
Well, not a startup per se, but there's some funding. There's a local company that does a lot of innovative stuff. Itamco is they're in Plymouth, so they're in Marshall County.
That's a great little town. That's a great little town, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I've mentioned them before, because these are the same people who said, you know, when things were at their worst economically, in 2008 and 2009, they were the ones who were saying, you know, we go to, we see these same people that work for us at church, at Little League games, at the grocery store, and all of that. And the feeling of their responsibility to the community, and in terms of, you know, how can you keep people employed, and if you can't, do you have the, do you get the same pain goes to management and ownership as well? And the answer to that was yes, but they in a small community like that, you really feel it. You really have a feel for that responsibility, because these are your neighbors. They're not just, and if you live in the Chicago area, you're so detached from almost everybody who works for you, because everybody goes off in their own different directions, and they're spread in a million different ways. So that's part of this company. But what they do is they make gears. That's their business, is to make gears. And they make, you know, everything from large turbine gears to, you know, small types of the kinds of gears that go in your car and in machinery and so on. And it's all very high tech and very very, you know, quality oriented. I remember visiting their plant, and you know, there was something there that said, you know, it was sitting on the out in the open with a label on it that says to scrap. And I said, what happened there? And they said, well, that's just an $11,000 piece of an $11,000 mistake. They are very quality oriented. They do a whole lot, and they work closely with Notre Dame on some of this stuff, and a little bit with us. We get more involved on the support side rather than the development side. But they a lot of very innovative stuff on that deals with conductivity, electrical charges, all of that kind of stuff. And I know they've gotten some grant money to do that, as much because of their relationship with Notre Dame as anything. And I don't doubt that some of that comes out of the infrastructure bill.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I think that if done in the, in a proper way, some kind of I don't want to call it. I mean, I'm really into I don't know how I can even say this, Kevin. You know, I'm very much for free enterprise, but it seems like we've truncated the free enterprise to such an extent. I don't know that a firm like that can just walk into a. Maybe you could in a local bank in Indiana, but a Chase Manhattan and get a. I don't think they want to talk to a small place in Indiana. The government has it so screwed up that I'm not so sure they almost have to be part of the fix, which
sounds weird. Yeah, Tom, smaller areas are benefiting, but it's the large corporations doing it. So we have, going up in the area. New Carlisle's got an Amazon data center going up. They have a battery plant that is GM and Samsung. And they have, it's an EV battery plant. And then Granger here has just got a commitment on a Google data center. So, yeah, stuff's going in here, but it's not the entrepreneurial stuff necessarily.
Well, it's
somebody like Itamco, yeah. But Google, it's just, I'm sure they're getting a lot of infrastructure money to go do it. And the Google one will be great because they're just buying up farmland. There is no infrastructure there to speak of. So it's just open space farmland. Well, what's going to happen is they're going to have to pull all kinds of power, especially for a data center. They're going to have to pull a ton of power there. They're going to have a lot of fiber going in and out of there. And every area around it is, you put up an industrial park there, and now all of a sudden you have everybody piggybacking on that. You can get a lot of economic development out of it.
Well, it certainly would be nice to spread some of it around because,
it'll translate to jobs. But again, what are the jobs? Do we have the, part of my job is to make sure that we have, well-trained tech people to go to work at these places and well-trained supply chain people to go to work at these places. But by the same token, a lot of it's going to have to be imported, or they're going to have to convince more Notre Dame people to stay here after they graduate, which we're seeing some movement that way too.
Well, you're this thing going on the south side that Pritzker just announced, essentially it's a some kind of a data center down on the old South Works site. I'm sure as hell hope it works. I mean, you're close to the University of Chicago, but it seems to me that every piece of the infrastructure that used to be there to support like a Southworks, now it was manufacturing, but is gone. I mean, there's I don't know how many people live in the neighborhood. I mean, CBS is, which should be your technical school for the whole area and for maybe the whole city, is damn near shut down. I don't think, I don't know how many people go to Olive Harvey. It's certainly nothing like what you guys have. I hope the dude can make it work, but he's got to make all kinds of other things work to make it work, I think. That are currently looking to me like they're not working. I mean, this is, as much as you and I joust, all this stuff sort of has to work in some kind of a cohesive thing. You got to have education, you got to have schools, you got to have housing, you got to have entertainment. It either all works or kind of it doesn't. I mean, I don't know how you, where all these people, they're all going to live downtown and have a big bus to commute there or what? I mean, I can't imagine. 800 people all of a sudden piling in on the east side over there. Can you and just buying houses?
I don't imagine it, Tom. Certainly not immediately, but you could envision that happening over 10 years.
Well, you have tremendous transportation, everything in those areas. I mean, the infrastructure was there. It's just been abused and whatever. It's not like there aren't rail lines. It's not like the IC doesn't run right there. Those kinds of things. I mean. It certainly is possible. I mean, there's no question about that.
Well, what's it going to take to get some 30-year-old experienced data analyst or somebody like that to move to the east side? That's your question.
Yeah, but that's
what's it going to take? Now, what I see here is where all the data centers are right now. I see a lot of mixed-use development in that area.
I could see the guy moving to Plymouth a hell of a lot quicker. Great school system.
To Plymouth, yes, but just south and west of downtown South Bend, which is right by the ballpark, that area, because that's where we have some big data centers right now, and so, you know, they've created, you know, the guy that owns the Cubs, actually, the South Bend Cubs, has done a development all around that ballpark area, and there's some really beautiful mixed-use stuff there that would be attractive for a young person. You are looking for youth. I mean, yeah, if I can get 50-year-old people, that's good too, but you're really looking for the people who are, you know, have the IT skills to really be to thrive in this environment.
Well, you know, I think you're I don't know, maybe I'm being jaundiced about Chicago. It's better than when I was there, but I'm still plunking down a family roots in downtown South Bend. It's probably somewhat better, but I'm not so sure that would be my mecca.
Well, it might not be Tomics, but there are a lot of people who really like living here. There's a lot of people who, and this was true when I lived in St. Joseph, too. There's a lot of people who, they grow up, they move away when they're young, and then they come back when they decide they're going to have a family, because it's a place to raise a family.
Well, I'm not talking about the areas that have grown. South Bend is almost like Chicago. There are spectacular areas that have grown up around the place. But you're still not going to be on the west side of South Bend. It's like Inglewood, for God's sake.
No, the west side's not nice. But there are some other parts of South Bend that are just beautiful.
Well, I had a discussion with...
And they are South Bend. They're not, you know, it's not like you're going to Granger or you're going to Michigan for those.
You're
over this way, I'll take you on a tour.
Well, I had a discussion with a gentleman last night, one of my attorney buddies, and he's a, you know, he's a long time, I mean, he's a lot older than me, and he's a long time Chicago guy. And he, you know, he says how many young people are still piling into Chicago, yet I see the downtown jobs... I don't know where they're all working, to be honest with you, Kevin. I mean, maybe I'm just jaundiced because on this side of the loop, I mean, the thing that saved the loop was the financial industry. We're talking thousands of people on trading floors and in buildings around them, and it's got to be, I don't know, it can't even be 5% of what it was. I mean, we're talking, you know, the entire Rock Island of the early train piled into these exchange buildings. And, you know, when you lose, I don't see another driver like that. Now, it sure could be with the hospitals here and all the research centers. I don't see why Chicago couldn't be another hotbed, why we can't be another Boston in those fields. I have no idea other than the fact the places run horribly. But we could be. I mean, I'd put Northwestern, University of Chicago, Rush, Loyola up against the four big hospitals in Boston any day. There's no replacement of that financial community. And it's not just because I was in it. You're talking lots and lots of people. It had to be 2,000 people on the CBOE floor itself. And then, not to mention the Board of Trade was probably more than that, and the Merck was more than that. So we're talking, you know, 8,000 people on floors with probably twice as many in the buildings in the three blocks around it. But you lose that. That's a massive driver. And I don't see anything necessarily.
Okay, yeah, it's like when we were younger, what did happen to South Bend? Well, you know, you had Studebaker left, Associates Financial left. As you start going down those lists, it is pretty damn harsh.
Kevin, whatever happened to Bendix? Are they totally gone?
Bendix was around until recently, but they even moved out of their big operation probably 15 years ago.
Why? Why did they move?
I just don't think they had enough to do there, to be honest with you. I think most of their manufacturing is spread out, and they didn't have a big manufacturing presence here. They had, you know, more of a home office, you know, headquarters technology type of.
I mean, does anybody Is that even a name anymore? I mean, you go by brakes, do you buy Bendix brakes and stuff? I mean, are they...
I'm sure they're out there. I'd have to look them up because, yeah, I don't see the name brand anywhere.
I mean, I know back when I had my 65 Oldsmobile, when you got brakes, you got Bendix brakes if you wanted the best ones, right? And I don't...
Hell, you got Bendix brakes for your bicycle.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you wonder if they just, if they all moved to China and sold out, or, you know, what happens to these places?
I have no doubt that they managed to outsource a lot of their manufacturing operations. But yeah, because there's one of the cool infrastructure things, and their footprint is primarily St. Joseph County, which is where South Bend is, but they've expanded into Elkhart County. They don't have nearly the footprint, and they've expanded into Marshall County. There's a not-for-profit fiber provider. It's called Choice Light now. When they first got started, it was the MetroNet, and they have a presence all over where any business you pay to build the relay to connect to their backbone. But once you're there, you have really, really cheap fiber access, and that will get you to any of the local data centers, or if you choose, it'll get you just to the internet, and you can have your data center in Chicago, or you can have your data center in Indianapolis, or you can have your data center halfway around the world. And access to cheap bandwidth and plentiful bandwidth is a big infrastructure deal. That's been going on here since way before.
Where do you get, man, I'm going to sound really stupid here only because I am. Where do you get bandwidth from? Are there certain spots in old railroad stuff that they're like super highways, and the closer you are to them, you can tap in? Or where do you get it from?
Well, yeah. So the two large data centers here. One of them is Union Station. Actually, there's a third one now, but the two largest data centers. One's the old Union Station train station. You know, the original train station in downtown South Bend. And
no trains, I assume.
No trains at all stop there. The station is there. It's right across from the ballpark. It looks pretty nondescript. It's all been rehabbed. It was ready to be condemned in the 70s, and a guy named Kevin Smith bought it and did the total rehab of it. So the old waiting room, the old waiting area is beautiful. It's been redone. You can have business meetings there. You could have a wedding reception there if you wanted to.
Well, South Bend is an Amtrak stop. Where do they stop?
It's out on the west side. It's just a platform. They are talking about building something out there now.
So the trains don't go through the tracks at the station either.
No, they just go rumbling on by.
but through there, because I mean.
Well, they don't go through the building. No.
Okay. All right.
No, they just go rumbling by, and then the platform where the trains used to pull in is now, that's all a data center. So you're walking into 2001, A Space Odyssey. You're ready for the computers to start telling you they can't do that. So the other side of the tracks is the old Studebaker factory. That's all been rehabbed. Same guy that owned Union Station finally bought that. So that was sitting there for decades unused.
What was the car they made, the sports car they made years and years after? They stopped making that too, right?
Oh, Avanti, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then just down the street a little bit from there is the Ignition Park, which houses a data center called Analytics, and a lot of tech businesses are there. So Notre Dame's got its supercomputer array in Union Station. Notre Dame's got its turbo machinery lab in Ignition Park. So, you know, you've got this investment from the university that has really given everything a good kickstart. But then you asked about the bandwidth. The internet trunks run along railroads, and they run along interstate highways and major U.S. highways. Guess what we have going in every direction here?
Yeah.
So it is a really, really good location for these kinds of things. Union Station is perfect for it. And so if you go into Union Station, not only do you have local companies using their data center, not only do you have Notre Dame, but you have all of the major carriers are in there. Ameritech, AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, US Signal, All of those types of carriers all have operations in there, so you can connect to their services right in that data center. There are a lot of people that run all of their servers there as private cloud types of applications. Amazon's got a bunch of servers in there. There's just so much that's in there. It's pretty awesome to see, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think somewhere along the line, you and I were jousting back and forth on the wage thing, and I kind of want to go into that a little bit. We probably should go to break here first, though. S&P Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 32. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. S&P Futures up 10.25. As that futures up 30, so we continue to creep forward. We actually were down a little bit yesterday, but we've been pretty much positive for a while, and I think I know the reason, and nobody's going to want to hear it, but whatever. Dow Jones futures up 60. Individual stocks, so here's the good one. Target's up like 14%. They came out and said, oh, God, everything's great. So it's up like $19, so they blew through the straddle by double. The market can't even price these moves. I mean, they're just, it's... Gee, let's have this stock up 10% or 15% or whatever. Every one of these stocks is just going up, and I think I have the reason for it. But then again, nobody wants to hear that. We're in Europe. DAX up 92, and these guys were down yesterday, but it's 0.5%. They're up today. FTSE's up 15, 0.2%. CAC around up 28. That's 0.4%. So bullish over there. Nikkei down 111, but they were up a bunch yesterday. So that's 0.29. Hang Seng down 120, 0.7%. 17,391. Shanghai down 10, 28.56. So Asia markets, they were a little lower after our rally kind of fell apart yesterday a little bit. The Japan trade swung to a deficit, so that's probably not good for those guys. So there's news around. Yesterday, Dow was down 61, S&P down 11, NASDAQ down 59, which, again, if there's a string of up days we've had, it's kind of not much. Bonds unchanged at 3.82. The Bund unchanged, 2.22. Japan down 0.87 as everybody's waiting for the big Jackson Hole speech. And Kevin, you also don't seem to have been invited to Jackson Hole. You think one of the people on the show would be. Invite me out. Oil up 7 cents, 73.24. Brent up 11 cents, 77.31. Oil just is languishing in the bottom end of this range here. Doesn't seem like it wants to do anything. It's like just a quiet market. Natural gas up 2.21. RBOB unchanged, 224. And RBOB got to like 245 a couple of months ago. It's down quite a bit. Gold down 290, but still 25.47. Silver up 11 cents, 29.63. Copper up 3 cents, 4.19. Foreign exchange, which is causing some of this, because the dollar has been weak. Euro's up to 111, so the dollar is still a little weak. British pound is at 130. Remember, it was at 123 3 or 4 not that long ago. Japan is at 146.05. Crypto, I mean, the dollar has been the issue here. Bitcoin down 105, 59,349, so under 60,000. Andrew, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right, it is 6:43 here in Chicago on Wednesday, August 21st. Starting off a little bit of baseball here, the Diamondbacks won over the Marlins, 3-1. The Cubs won over the Tigers, also 3-1. While the White Sox lost to the Giants, 1-4. Weather today in Chicago is going to be a little bit cooler than the week we've experienced beforehand. Right now it is partly sunny and pleasant. We're going to have a high of 74 today, and we are currently at 60 degrees. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 91 degrees. It's going to be a warm day, but they're also going to have some thunderstorms later in the day, and possibly into the overnight as well.
Thunderstorms in the desert?
Yeah, that's a first for me. First for me. It's like all I ever see here is just pure sun on this report, but they're going to have a high of 104. And finally, for Chicago traffic, thankfully no major accidents to report. There are a bit too many to list of closures due to the Democratic National Convention down here in downtown. But other than that, if you're on the inbound expressways, things are looking pretty clear for now. I think the traffic's building a little bit near the Kennedy, but that's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
So, Kevin, I don't know if you read Hal's missive yesterday. It's somewhat amazing. I mean, just goes to show you in immortal words of Vin Scully, he is like the rest of his day-to-day, right? This British technology entrepreneur, Mike Lynch, turns out he was hanging out in his 156-foot sailboat with Morgan Stanley International Chair Jonathan Bloomer and his wife, and Clifford Chance lawyer Chris Monvello and his wife Nada. This guy had a luxury yacht anchored near somewhere in Sicily. First of all, the guy he forms the business with, and was also sued by Hewlett Packard, or they got hit by a car 2 days ago and killed in Britain, right, Kevin? Or something along those lines. And now this guy, a storm shows up. They think a tornado went right for this guy's boat and capsized this monster boat, and all these people died. So Hal's convinced that the chances of this happening randomly is like 1 in 90 bazillion. He stopped short of saying that the big guy has a vendetta for his firm or the big guy favors Hewlett Packard. What do you think, Kevin?
HP can use all the help it can get. aside from that, I'm pretty sure it wasn't an act of God, because the old expression is that when the gods want to punish us, they answer our prayers.
It is,
they grant our wishes or something like that. So
I think you think you're pretty safe. The thing got whacked so bad, Kevin, that the mast was broken without any sails up. What the hell kind of tornado hit this thing?
Well, it's got to be a direct hit, and there are like these mini tornadoes, so they do happen.
Yeah, I guess you don't necessarily hope they're coming for your head, but I guess they could be, eh?
Well, one of our softball buddies, had one of those nail his house. Did a little damage, wasn't a killer, but it was just this little mini thing, but something that kind of hits your yard and burns itself out as quickly as it happens.
Well, they kind of bounce up and down, and they land in somebody's place, and then they go right over to the next guy's place, and they didn't have any damage. And it's anyway, we were talking a little bit, jousting back and forth about salaries and wages and how sometimes percentages. And I misquoted Kevin's tweet to me yesterday, which I didn't do on purpose. I just happened to look at it, and then my phone went off.
But I was still being pissy about it.
So. I know. You were. It was not your finest hour, but that's okay. You're the best. You wonder when things kind of have not been, and maybe in some people's opinion, equal for a while. It's hard to sort of even them up. By the way, I was going to mention why I thought the market has been so resilient yesterday. As our people in office, and of course the people before them in office, nobody caused this inflation, right? It's all the other guy's fault. Nobody did it, and Powell has been fighting it for 3 years. Kevin, could there be a bigger bunch of bull crap than the two parties and Powell talking together? They've got the money supply growing the last 2 months at a 4.7% rate. Tell me how that's fighting inflation. That is fueling the market. It is fueling inflation again. What is with these people? And everybody's pointing a finger saying they're the ones fighting it. The other guy caused it. I mean, it's right there in front of everybody's face.
Wasn't it Friedman who articulated it well, where he said the difference between what the tax revenue you get and the spending that the government has is inflation.
Well, yeah, it's also, well, it depends on how you get it, how you get the money. There's three ways. If the government is gonna put up a fence for the convention, they're gonna get the money one of three ways. They either borrow it from people, they tax people for it, or they print it. There's no fourth way. And if they raise the taxes, and then people are pissed off, but that's one way of doing it. That doesn't cause inflation. You can borrow it. That doesn't cause inflation. Or you can print it, which does cause inflation. I mean, can you think of another way?
No.
I suppose
trying to come up with something silly, but I can't even come up with
something. Well, I suppose if you had a gold if you had a gold mine and all of a sudden you yanked out, you know, a gazillion ounces of gold, I guess all of a sudden that wouldn't be inflationary necessarily. It would just be wealth creating, I suppose. But
it could be wealth creating, but it is throwing money into the out of nowhere into the system. So it probably would have some inflationary effect.
Yeah, and you know, I've said a few times recently that and it kind of got to our you're in my jousting yesterday about the cook in the Thai restaurant, and when you, for those that I maybe have never thought of it, I'm sure if you thought about it, everybody know. I mean, economics is really a science in a lot of ways. People will say, well, you guys can't predict crap, but it's a science in a lot of ways. Essentially, the apportionment of scarcity, right, Kevin?
I mean, Keep going.
But I mean, if everybody had, what do they call the thing on the Enterprise? If you just walk over and said, "Steak dinner, well done," you know, glass of wine, and everybody could do that, there's no need for economics. Economics is how do you apportion scarcity to people, and it can be done either by some socialist way. Allegedly, it can be done in a more competitive way where you try and get the best out of people, and that way you maximize the stuff that you have to spread around so your scarcity is less. That's really the key for capitalism, competitive capitalism. There's kind of a fascism, which is a few firms up with their nose up the ass of government in every industry. There's a bunch of different ways to, quote, do this. But whenever you have I use the term discount.
Or bigger pie.
Yeah, or bigger pie. Well, you still some people get it and some people don't, right?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I wouldn't want to indicate that when we say apportioned scarcity that it's a zero-sum game, because it's not. We can create what wasn't there before. We can actually have more product and more consumption of that product.
Well, I mean, the famous line for that is, there's no such thing as a shortage. There's just too low of a price. Right?
I get that. Yeah, that's a good adage.
There's all kinds of theories that pile off of economics. You know, where's Hal when I need him? They have to do with labor economics. It has to do with, and when I say something which I think most people think is like really dumb, when I say in the long run, the owners should not benefit more than the lessors or the lessees. And people say, what are you talking about? I mean, you're always better off owning something. Well, in our society, maybe so, but theoretically, it shouldn't make any difference, right, Kevin? Both people, if you and I all of a sudden are, you know, say we were out of college and we're living in a place, and one of us gets a really good idea for a business and we throw all our money toward the business. So we just want to lease a place. We don't have money for a down payment because we're starting a business. Okay, but the owner of the building, he should get a return based on interest, based on the risk-free rate, based on some sort of a risk. He should get paid a little bit for his time if he's running around fixing toilets and stuff. There's a justification for how much. But the idea over a 10-year period that the house, or the apartment triples in value, and all of a sudden the rent is, you know, four times higher 10 years from now or 15 years from now, that's not normal, Kevin. That's not somebody being favored over somebody else. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Economically, because
explain that one a little more, though. I think it's worth a little bit deeper dive into.
I'm saying,
why is that not fair? Why is that not normal?
Because somewhere or another, the value of the building, the fixed asset, is now greatly exceeded what you would expect in just having a normal return on interest rate. In other words, inflation caused that. Right? Why would the price of the building be four times higher 10 years from now? I mean, what has actually happened?
Let's run with that for a minute. What are the things that would cause it? Inflation clearly is one of them.
But I mean, if you end up, like you were talking earlier, very eloquently, by the way, if all of a sudden some massive data center landed next door, okay, to where all of a sudden people are making a real lot of money and want to live close to work. Okay, now you should get that return on that building on rents for a while, because you happen to be the lucky sperm club or the lucky location club. But you and I are going to say, wait a minute, that rent is $4,000. If we build 100 other units, and we can get even 3,500, there's a discontinuity there. The market should generally move to fill that gap, right? So after a few years, the huge excess you got just by being in the right place in the right time should even out, right?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly true. That's why I asked you to lay it out.
It is
a longer run
change,
though. It is not something that would typically happen overnight. But on the other hand, when you do raise that rent to 4,000 and then the market starts to respond to that, you can find yourself way overpriced. And having to bring it down, and maybe you priced yourself out of the market in a way that, you've damaged your reputation, but you've also built yourself a business model around a new a higher price that turns out not to be a sustainable business model.
Well, but if you're building apartments, it could be long term. If somebody owns the one breakfast place, okay, when the place moves in and all of a sudden the omelets are $30, you and I could buy some place next door that used to be a, God knows what, a bike shop.
Shirley's.
In 3 weeks we've got a breakfast place, right? So it doesn't have to be all that long term. I mean, but that's the beauty of our economy, is to have people be able to react quickly and see these discontinuities, I'll call them, and act to. Now, when you inject stuff like patents and things like that, those things can't happen, and those become problems, you know, in a lot of ways. The only way you're going to get all of a sudden everybody's rent over a 10-year period is up 3%, I mean, or 30% or 40% or 50% is some sort of a general inflation. If it happens everywhere, not just where a new that what you're really done then is you say, You've decreased the value of the dollar, okay? And when that happens, the people who own stuff benefit more than people who don't. I mean, the Weimar Republic, the people that were absolutely gung-ho and the huge inflationary thing they put in to essentially screw with Britain and France and the payments they had to pay them, the first people that were all for it were the people that owned farms and had a mortgage. Okay, you tripled the price of wheat, but it doesn't matter because now the cost of seed and everything else is triple. But guess what? All of a sudden, nominally, I'm making a lot more money. All of a sudden, this mortgage, I'm going to pay it off in 6 months. And the bank's sitting there going, well, that's interesting. But the crap you're giving me here, even though it's the same number as I gave you, it's not worth squat. So you cause all these kinds of discontinuities. I mean, but this is, Kevin, this is a two-week class every day to somebody. It's really hard for people to understand this because it's not all that intuitive, is it?
Well, it is as you lay it out, but no, it's not what people think of first. So that's a problem. And how many times have not just me, not just you, but guests you know, all of our all of your sidekicks, all of your Stocks and Jocks sidekicks get to this one time or another, is we just don't have a well-educated public anymore, especially when it comes to economics education. And that allows someone to say, you know, a political candidate to say, I'm going to give everybody a $25,000 credit towards down payment so that we can have more home ownership. Oh, good. That sounds really good. Yes, I like that. Thank you. The problem is, you know, all it's going to do is run up the price of your home in the, by $25,000. So, it sounds good until you start thinking about the implications of it.
Well, Kevin, we Russell can pile in when he wants. We won't have a break, but it's all about, when I read was it yesterday or the day before, I was reading the Harris Economic Plan, and a lot of it has to do with child care. You just mentioned the home down payment, and if you look at what, and we do this a lot on the show. I mean, it gets, you know, sporadic because we have different guests. But first of all, I'm here every day, so I remember all the guests. So I remember what they all say. But when Nancy was talking about how she has given mortgages to people, and Carl started it out by saying how many, you know, a generation ago you had one breadwinner, and all of a sudden the cost got higher and higher to where, and the wages didn't keep pace, where you now you'd have two breadwinners or somebody working part-time to be in the same sort of situation that you were before. And then it became every family's got two breadwinners, pretty much. And now Nancy's talking about when she gives mortgages out to people, there's like 2.3 jobs there. You know, the guy's helping his brother-in-law paint houses, or the lady's used to be a beautician, now she's an executive and she's, you know, doing hair on a Saturday, or somebody's doing taxes or something. That we've reached the end of the line where you still have kids. Okay, well, now you have to, you know, have to pay for child care. Well, for a long time, people did child care under the table, cash, to maybe some lady who just, you know, came from Mexico or someplace or wherever. Whatever, doesn't matter.
Or didn't, you know, come from out of the country but still wanted to be off book.
Right, or be off book. Just a lady down the block says, okay, my husband's working, we need some extra dough. These three ladies on the block want to go to work. Okay, how about bringing your three babies over? I got one of my own, and I'll take care of them for the, you know, 3 days a week or whatever, and give me $50 a day or $40 a day or whatever it is. And that was part of the, I'll use the term, underground economy. When all of a sudden, God's sake, who was the one person that couldn't run for president because he didn't give his maid Social Security? Who the hell was that? Or was senator? The guy got absolutely, you know, pilloried in the town square because he did.
Yeah, somebody got nailed. I can't remember who that was.
Yeah, I don't know.
In the 80s, I think.
Yeah. And all of a sudden now you're paying $20 an hour plus benefits. And guess what? The person working is making $25 an hour, maybe with benefits. And you're going, what the bleep? Well, everything that Kamala Harris is talking about, they're all symptoms to what we talk about. And now the point is the government the one that caused the problem in the first place? Which I think the answer is yes. And now they go around about treating the symptoms, which is what they're trying to do in their own way. Now, I don't think that you get that far doing that, Kevin, because you and I are more free market kind of people. But as a political solution, taking all the stuff that we talk about on the show is what happening to a regular family, it's not surprising to me that that's somebody's platform, because that right now is where the rubber's meeting the road. Hey, I can't pay. We need two people to work, but I can't pay for child support. How many families are in that pickle? Millions?
Yeah, because what are the costs of having the second person work?
Yeah,
and it is child care. It is, although that's getting solved now because nobody's having babies.
Well, yeah, anymore. That's not what you want either. But
that's definitely not what you want. So you have that issue, but then what else goes with that? Well, now you start talking about transportation. I have to have reliable transportation for two. Now, you know, we say most families have two cars now, but what drove most families to have two cars? Employment or something else? Now, a lot of families have way more than two cars because the teenage kids have cars. And, you know, so you get all of that kind of stuff. And then a wardrobe. I need a wardrobe for work. I used to, bank I used to work at in the 90s, President Arnie Weaver, you know, used to say, "Casual business casual days are not helping out your average schmuck because they don't have that kind of wardrobe. They have the their jeans and gym shoes, and they have the business suit that you have to wear to work, because in those days in banking you wore a suit to work." He said, "We're not helping them out by having casual days because we're just sending them to the store to buy business casual stuff."
The guy who used to be the head of you know how right you are, Kevin. The guy who was the head of marketing, the CBOE. That was his last name. I'll think of it. But good guy. He said, "I have my 10 suits and my ties and my shirts all set out. I wear one every 10 days." And he goes, "Now all of a sudden I got to go out and buy these khakis and polo shirts." Say, you're spot on.
Yeah. So my solution to that, now that everything is business casual, and certainly, you know, at a college it is, with everything business casual, and we got to get Russell on, so
yep.
I'll say this and go away. I buy as many, I have a whole collection of khakis, but they're all black, so that I don't have to match anything.
Oh, good.
And so I wear black pants and a different colored shirt every single day. That's my wardrobe.
Well, do we have Russell?
I'm here.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. My business casual, I was going to, actually was going to see spring training, and I had a couple clients down in Arizona. So what do you suppose I do for business casual? I go out and buy two brand new polo shirts. They're sitting on top of my suitcase. And I get out there and I'm going, "Gee, where the hell are my polo shirts? You big dummy, you must have left them on the bed in your bedroom." So I got to go buy a couple more out there so I could go see my clients. Sure enough, somebody lifted them. So when you go to the desert, you don't put your business casual stuff on the top of your suitcase with only a zipper and not a lock. Just saying.
Definitely not. Was that somebody from the Biden administration who dresses like a woman that lifted your stuff?
Oh, God, no. It was
all right, I got to go,
all right,
guys.
On that note, see ya.
See ya, Kevin.
We've had very interesting discussion with Mr. Kevin regarding the what's going on in Chicago, the long-term inflation sort of stuff, and how this all started, Russell, with Kevin and I arguing about when people have been, if you inflate your fixed stuff, not just the market, but you inflate what all started this is yesterday. I'm listening to all these politicians, and I actually looked at the growth in the money supply in the last 2 months. And on an annual basis, 4.7%. And if that's fighting inflation, I'm going to be a jockey in the seventh race today. I mean, who's kidding who here?
How can you do that with 3% inflation? You can't.
No. Well, I mean, you're certainly not going to get down to 2 or whatever.
Eventually. I hate when I ask trick questions. I shouldn't have done that to you this early in the morning.
No, I'm saying these guys are saying that they're fighting inflation as best they can, and they're doing the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what Kevin and I were fighting about, or arguing about, or discussing, or something, was if you end up favoring asset owners over a long period of time, you know, all of a sudden now And you look at your cook in your restaurant, and you say,
and there's you do that, and there's a huge disparity in wealth.
Yeah,
you know, and then the same people that created it are going to say they're doing some things to fix it, and the things they're going to do to fix it are very similar to what they did to create it. What the heck?
Well, yeah, and if you're,
you know, it's that whole definition of insanity thing. Expecting a different outcome when you're doing the same things over and over again. And I say things because it's a lot of different type of stuff. But I saw one place that they were talking about a 40%+ capital gains tax. Is that correct?
I don't know. Are they going to index it or not?
I don't know what they would index it to, but I saw where one of the things that there's lots of stuff being thrown around right now because we've got a candidate that's been around for I think a month and a couple of days or so we're the kind of stuff that you would usually learn 6 months ago campaign wise we're learning now.
Well, what is the, you probably know the answer to this more than me.
One of the things I've just kind of been patiently waiting on is to see, you know, what the reaction is and what the impression is of her after this week, where everybody really does get a direct look at her as the person in the front. You know what I mean? She's always, you know, as opposed to being the number two person. I guess it's going well for her. It seems to be going well as far as poll numbers and stuff goes, but some of the things that she's proposed, you know, that have gotten proposed or thrown out there, they're very concerning to me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I just to try to be very unemotional and logical about this thing, what I'm hoping is that, you know, politicians say an awful lot, and then what they do when they get in office tends to be different. So, and then also what I'm kind of hoping, because I do think she's going to get elected. I don't think there's any question on that one. What I'm really hoping is that, you know, she's got a counterbalance in a Congress that she has to get things through. That's really all.
Well,
I
don't want a Congress like, what's his name, McConnell did to Obama. And just wanted him out of office, and I don't want a Congress like these guys did to Trump, and just screwed him over for 4 years. I don't want a Congress like either one of those.
I want one that takes a look at, and I don't want to get into any specific parole or anything. Just takes a look at, you know, she suddenly says, we're gonna, you know. Internet and phones are going to be free for everybody. I'm just making something up.
Yeah, that's not far away, by the way.
A lot of sense. I know it's not that far away, but nobody's paying for my, you know, nobody's paying for my phones and my internet and my cable. I guess you got to throw cable in there too as a kicker. But you know, if she throws something like that out there, and I know I'm trying to be ridiculous because it's more of a.
I don't think you're that ridiculous. I think she's pretty close to something like that. To be honest with you.
So if she throws something like that out there, and, you know, we've got, hopefully, you know, we've got Congress and, you know, that maybe has a little bit more logic to their thinking than stuff like that, and maybe puts a block on that one. I've been watching, and this is going to sound kind of like I'm completely changing topics, but I swear I'm not. I was watching a thing about. Well, I watched the movie that came out recently about you know, getting an advertising person to help with the space race and make sure that they can get the money out of Congress. There really was back in the early 70s a decision to be made because we were pretty much we were spending just about everything that we could possibly spend because we had the war going on in Vietnam. And we had a lot of other things going on, and there was, you know, this cost component, and we can only do so much component to it's one of the things that kind of ruined the space program for some time. We couldn't afford it. The 70s were a freaking mess.
Oh yeah,
you know, but you know, I don't care if we can afford something or not. We just do it and don't worry about the we don't worry about the fiscal part anymore.
Russell, I have a question for you, and you know, not because I know you're not old enough to remember this, but you do more economic research than I do. You have the ability to, anyway. You look at stuff, you know, like the internet, like cell phones or whatever. We have had a history, and I don't know the history of it. I don't think that, like, the rural electrification program, was that Roosevelt? How was that financed? I mean,
I don't know how it's financed, but I mean I know that was a big one of those big New Deal things.
But it was, I mean, we're talking about somebody living in central Illinois in a farmhouse was never going to be able to compete, couldn't get a radio, couldn't get anything because there were, you know, there were no transistors in those days. Somebody said, look, we've got to find a way to bring these people into the 20th century, or for lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah.
And at first it was electrification. I think I think once you had the electrification, to put the phone lines on the same poles was probably pretty easy. But there's no way on earth that that farmhouse or the two farmhouses in that square mile paid for all those electric poles and wire and stuff. I mean, how long did it take? Would they take to them to pay all that? I mean, they did. So somehow somebody put up that cash, and whether they overcharged other people as they could do it. I kind of wish I knew. I thought maybe you had some sort of insight as to there had to be some government money in there somewhere. Now was it a waste?
There's a logic behind that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was necessarily a waste. Also, we were trying to, you know, I don't have a real problem with what was done from what I've read about it. I wasn't around. But from what was done, you know, back in the 30s to attempt to get us back on track, even some of the things that maybe didn't work as well as we had hoped they would, just because you had to try something at that point. You know, I mean, and you really didn't have a whole lot of history to work with to figure out, okay, you know, when else had the stock market crash like it had and had the wide-ranging effect, and was the economy so far out of kilter that we had to figure out something to get us back on track? And then also, you know, government's job is to protect us. And to, you know, and to provide certain services that only government can do, like, you know, building out an interstate system. Even though, you know, in the Chicago area, we pay a small fortune in tolls just to get around.
Yeah.
But, you know, but those types of things. And, you know, in the public education part as well. And, you know, if you want, and farmers are very important to, you know, to this country, the fact that we can feed ourselves is one of the things that makes us a superpower.
Yeah, you know, not only ourselves, China, we feed everybody else, which gives us money.
Well, that Russia and China cannot feed themselves, and that's part of the motivation behind Russia going after the Ukraine. But you know, I don't have a problem with the amount of money that it costs to, you know, put in the electric lines for people that live 2 miles from each other. Really don't. I know that it doesn't make economic sense, but that's just one of those things that I feel like the government should be a little bit socialist on. You know, and they probably still don't. Electric companies probably still don't make money off of the people that they're stuck providing service to out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, you know, what seems different to me, Russell, and this is just going back, you know, my own lifetime and the stuff I've read. I think the issue now, in a lot of ways, I think in the 30s, you could go find, you know, a crew of five or six people that you could actually hire and pay to put the damn line up, you know. And this is when New Orleans, this is a long time ago, was it, what the hell hurricane was that, Katrina?
Yeah, it was Katrina where they really had to.
Well, they poured all this federal money into the thing, and was looking down the list of this grant got paid by somebody to somebody. Mm-hmm. It was a, you know, some ne'er-do-well. I don't know if he was a community organizer. I don't know if he was just some white guy who had connections or whatever the hell it was. Essentially got these contracts. Well, they immediately subcontracted them out to somebody else for, like, way less because they got paid way, way too much. And that person subcontracted it out to somebody else, and this guy went out and there was like two dump trucks cleaning up crap in the whatever the Fifth Ward or whatever the thing was, and the guy's got some old dump truck and four guys from Mexico. He's paying cash. He was like the fourth contractor down the line, and the actual job of what he was paying those guys and himself and his truck and the brooms and crap was like some like a 10% of what the contract actually was. It was like four other people along the way. Mm-hmm. I don't think we had that in the 30s.
No. I think there was there was an accountability with respect to where the money went that has completely disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't.
There really was an accountability. You know, you could go, but you know, it's not funny that we're talking about this, but you remember Anna Mandrievsky that we had on once or twice,
yeah,
that did the open the books thing. Yeah, I mean, he was the one that was, and the reason I say that, he actually passed away over the weekend.
Oh, okay, sorry to hear that.
But I found out about 5 minutes before the show. And he was really big. He was, he made an awful lot of money, that was able to retire probably about 20 years ago, and he ran for governor. But one of the other things that he did was, he just started, you know, tracking where actual money went and created a website that would show you, you know, where the actual money was going. And it was just, absolutely, horrendous what happens with government money. But I think there's just this average voter mentality or average American mentality that it does, that's not real money, or they compartmentalize government spending versus the real economy, or they just don't even think about it.
Well, it's all, I mean, yeah, if you,
it's,
I mean, you and I, and, might say, and, if we see some school in whatever, West Side, South Side, wherever it happens to be, in some small town, and we see the kids going there and nobody's got a computer, and mm-hmm. and it looks to me like the, you know, if you plug all the computers in the electrical system, the place is going to blow up. You and I might do something really stupid, like, let's call the local contractor. What's it going to take to up the voltage, not the voltage, but the service in this place, and make sure that, you know, that everything's grounded, that everything's done properly, and for us to get the minimum specs we need of computers for people or tablets for people to sit down, and let's go to MC, whatever those guys are, and say, okay, the basic computer, we want to buy 300 of them. I'll bet you we can get them for $150 a piece. You know, get some sort of a screen that somebody can look at. And I'm going to say, we can outfit that place in 2 weeks for X. For the government to do it, I'll bet it's 10 times X, because 15 idiots' thumbs in the pie. Just saying.
Yeah. I think where everything breaks down is an accountability part of it. You know, like you just said, that four people got paid before anybody even picked up a broom down in New Orleans. You know, how do you, and you would think that there should be, you know, some sort of guidelines as to, you know, if we're going to, you know, if we've got to put together a contract and it's going to have 500 labor hours in it. And labor's $30 an hour or something along those lines, and you got a manager and you got a few other things, and then a 10% profit, put on top of that for all their trouble and everything else. This is about what the numbers should be. I had an extra thought, and which means we're in trouble now, that just popped in my head. But Kamala's talking about, price gouging on food and some other things, which I feel like has been taken a bit out of context. I think what she was trying to talk about was those sorts of situations in emergency situations, not in day-to-day life. But should there not, I think maybe the government, instead of worrying about that, ought to worry about price gouging of government contracts.
Oh,
and they don't care.
Well,
you know, and in the immediate, you know, how are you going to go about paying for this is an automatic thing. They can dance around that one, but in reality, they're not paying for a lot of things. We're not paying for just about anything that we get from the government right now. We're paying for the interest on it.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
we're living our lives right now as a country, just like somebody back in 2008 that couldn't afford a big house, that has an interest-only loan.
By the way, they're back.
I know they are.
Yeah.
I had a student ask me about one yesterday.
Well, we have
If I thought it made sense.
Well, we had a big... We've been talking really for the last couple of weeks about truth in politics. And now, I'm going to say that if Kamala shows up tomorrow night and she says, by the way, The inflation that you're all feeling, and 80% of the population is grinding on. It's been it's been absolutely the fault of the last two administrations by degrading the dollar in your pocket to the point where everything costs more, and I'm going to fix that. Okay, the chances of her saying that are about the same as me being a jockey today in the seventh race. You have to be a pretty big horse. Now, or you come out and say, damn it, these people are gouging you, these food companies, I'm going to make sure that's it. Saying she's
and
gonna,
I'm on your side.
Yeah, but saying you're going to stop.
You're getting screwed over by businesses.
Well, I mean, for somebody to come out and say, I'm going to ban price gouging, is the same as saying, I'm going to promote motherhood. What does it mean?
I think price gouging is illegal. Are there laws against price gouging in, I know they have them in Illinois.
Well, yeah, but how do you define it?
I mean, I know that back, you brought up Katrina. Back during Katrina, there was a gas, you know, there was a disruption of energy.
Sure.
And gas stations jacked the crap out of their gas prices. And I know that that one of the gas stations near where I lived at the time actually got fined in a nasty way. In fact, I think they had to close because they got fined so badly.
Well, even you and I are going to up the price of the umbrella in the rain.
Jacking the gas price by like a dollar a gallon.
So you think
what they did?
You think the umbrella should be the same price in the rain?
Oh, not gosh, no, but within reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I'm saying you can say stuff. I'm against.
And I love the price gouging on the umbrella because if you're ever in New York City and there's a sudden downpour, all those guys that are selling, you know, that got falafels and hot dogs and everything else, they got a bucket of $10 half broken umbrellas right behind the cart that just suddenly put out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And it's not until the rain. You know, it's like they time it with, okay, I can see the rain three blocks down. Here you go.
Well, my underlying bitch about this whole about this whole election is we're not going to hear anybody say anything of substance all the way to November, which is
yeah.
Hey, I have a question for you. I hope you have the answer to this. I'm not just jumping in. What are the specifics? I seem to recall when they went through, there was a half-life on the Trump tax cuts. Did they all expire in 26 or half of them or? Do you have a clue on that, or should we worry about that next week on the show?
I think I do know that they're coming up during the next administration, and I do think it's all of them.
And so every rate goes
where,
back,
and that's where we get, you know, the new tax rates that Kamala might be. I saw, and I don't know if it's true or not. There's just so much crap floating around right now, but I saw that. There's the belief that their top capital gains tax is going to jump up to 45%. Now, I don't know how true that is or not, but that is an absolutely horrendous idea.
What do you think of Rastenkowski? I shouldn't ask this question because neither one of us believe the CPI. But if you could believe the CPI, like I think once upon a time you could, what do you think of... Did you ever, when you were a big shot over... at the SIBO, did you ever go to any of the breakfasts with all the politicians?
Yeah, I did.
Did you go to the ones with Rasty?
No, we didn't overlap.
Okay, so he was before your time.
I mean, he'd gone to jail by the time I even went.
No, he never went to jail.
Okay, well, you know what I mean. He was pushed out or whatever.
I don't want you to get you in a political.
He didn't go to jail.
No.
Okay, I thought he got convicted of something.
He was the stamping or whatever, the postage
crap. Yeah, he was stealing. You know, I gotta cover my tracks better when I'm stealing stamps from the office.
Well,
thanks for reminding me of that. I remember it was something silly like that.
I don't want you to get in trouble on political stuff, so I'll say it now.
No, you can say it. I'll say whatever.
Looking back on it, I knew of him. I met him a couple times at the SIBO breakfast, but one of my buddies was pretty tight with him. They were in the tax business and so forth. And Rasty was a God, he was bigger than me. He's a big man. Big, tough Polish dude from the hood who walked his dog by himself every morning, and nobody wanted to mess with him. Now, you could have got up and shot him in this, today's world, but you wouldn't want to. You wouldn't walk up and take a swing at him. It would not be the good idea, right? But he, there's nobody takes a swing at anybody anymore. You shoot him instead. He just was this big, tough Polish guy that you couldn't push around. And not saying he was perfect or anything like that, but he was the first guy to have I think in Congress to have his own pack, because he never ran against anybody. Nobody ran against him here.
Yeah,
I mean, people in Chicago are smart enough to know, geez, if you got a guy that high up the chain, you don't put some other dummy in there to go and start out at the lowest committee. Anyway, so his thing was, because one of the things I've always wanted to do in Congress was this capital gains. Why do we screw around with this? Why don't we just index it? And he explained one day, I mean, the guy actually had an economic idea, which you don't get these other people. He goes, look, if somebody buys something a year ago and sells it for a huge profit in 366 days, he goes, why should they get any kind of a break? I mean, he goes, if the inflation along the way is 10%, they should get 10% off of the price. Because he said, but if somebody buys a house 30 years ago for 40 grand and sells it today for 80, and the inflation along the way is 100%, he hasn't made anything, which is true, right, Professor? I mean, really, in terms of regular dollars, you haven't made a dime. He goes, I can't get anybody to want to do that. He goes, ever. But anyway, he got pushed out by stamps. Nobody gives a crap about stamps. And who replaced them was Denny Hastert, right? Was it Denny or was it Newt? Was it Newt? Who came right after him?
I think Newt would have come. Well, no, Newt. Yeah, Newt would have come after him when. You know, I don't think he was immediately after him.
You know, after the break, we're going to ask Andrew to dig in to see. Because Denny Hastert, I mean, there's no doubt people had the goods on him, right? Whoever put him in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
he was in charge of the Ways and Means Committee.
That's right. He was Ways and Means Committee. He was never Speaker, Rasty.
No. But Ways and Means was controlling all the money.
Well, they booted him out, and they ended up with Denny Hastert as the Speaker. And I'm going, who is this guy? And then it turns out everybody knew he had this issue behind him, and he was controlled by somebody. Who's the somebody? I wonder. Whatever. Anyway, S&P futures up 13. NASDAQ futures up 51. We come back, and I'm going to try and get it, but the definitive thing on Russell, when is this inflationary work by the Fed going to stop, and do we wait for that day to sell the market, or at least even out or something? We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 43. We've got the big mover this morning is Target's up like $22. It's 15%. It really is easy money on these earnings things. And we did an earnings play in there yesterday. Boy, I was thinking of doing like up 5%. And I'm thinking that's kind of crazy. And so I didn't even do that. But good thing it's a very small earnings play, because I didn't exactly plan on $21 up. Now, it could come back down, but they don't. I mean, they just keep going. It's kind of crazy. Now I know why when I see these money supply numbers. Over in Europe, we've got Bullishness here, not huge, but bullishness. DAX up 95.5%, FTSE up 18.2%, CAC around up 35.5%. Asia, however, since we actually were down yesterday, Asia's kind of down a little bit. Nikkei up down 111.3%, not a lot. Hang Seng, however, down 120, it's 0.7. 17,391, we're going to get Russell's weekly take on China. Shanghai down 10.3%, 2856. Cannot really get back to 2900 here. It's tried a couple times, it just goes right back down. Yesterday we had a down day, but very little. Dow was down 61, S&P down 11, NASDAQ down 59. Did not have the usual mutual fund buyers on the close last night, as we have had every day. Little bit of it, but not much. It's really been driving the market, the buyers on the close. Bonds, the 10-year unchanged 3.81, the Bund unchanged 2.20, Japan down one basis point, 0.87. Oil up 15 cents, but 73.32, way at the bottom in its recent range. Brent up 17 cents, 77.37. Natural gas unchanged, 220. We've got gold, which has been on a tear. It's down 90 cents, but still 25.49. High as it's been, it holds right below its record high. I mean, this is high for that. Silver up 16 cents, 29.68. Copper up 3 cents, 4.19. We had Joel on yesterday thinking that silver might be going to catch up. It's been kind of lagging gold. Yeah, it's more of an industrial use than gold. They're really not the same, but you think they move more in parallel. The U.S. dollar, here's kind of the story, and Russell's going to comment on this. The euro's up to 111. British pound's at 130. Those have been the highest for kind of a while here. And Japan is 145.87. Now, again, Japan's the flip side. It's the euro is a euro's worth $1.11. Yet on the Japan side, 145, that means 145 of those to the dollar. So you got to think of it the opposite way. Why we do that, I don't know. I believe it's some economist's fault, Russell. Bitcoin down up 46 cents, 46 bucks, sorry, 59,502. Had a drop yesterday, but still, it's kind of in the $60,000 spot for a little while now. Andrew, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
All right, it is 7:36 here in Chicago on Wednesday, August 21st. A little bit of sports. The Diamondbacks won over the Marlins, 3-1. The Cubs also won over the Tigers, also 3-1. And the White Sox lost to the Giants, 1-4. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently 63 degrees. It's going to be a little bit cooler today than the rest of the week. We have partly sunny skies, and it's going to have a high of 74. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 90 degrees. They're going to have a high of 104, and it's going to be a warm day with a chance of thunderstorms late in the afternoon. Finally, for Chicago traffic, looks like no major changes from our first hour. Of course, we still do have various closures for the National Convention. Other than that, traffic is building on the inbound expressways, especially on the Kennedy. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, are you going to? I know you're not a big drinker. Are you gonna change that with Beyonce launching her new whiskey line?
Oh, of course. I'm gonna stock my bar with Beyonce whiskey and put it right next to my Ryan Reynolds Aviator Gin.
Ryan Reynolds? What is that?
You don't know who Ryan Reynolds is?
No.
He's Deadpool.
Ah. Okay. Ah,
and he owns a he's Deadpool, but I think he may actually be approaching being a billionaire because he bought the equivalent of a minor league football team over in England and has boosted that thing and bought a gin brand and boosted that thing. He's like in Cricket Mobile, he got part of that. And, yeah, he's like a huge marketer, but also a beloved actor who everybody's wives loves.
Well, if somebody, dropped $1 billion on stock.
Yeah, I only drink celebrity endorsed alcohol except for Bud Light because I'm not a big fan of that one celebrity that dresses like a little girl.
Well, would you have drank more Bud when Spuds McKenzie, the little terrier dog, was doing
it? Hell yeah. And yeah. I was screaming, "What's up?" for years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been marketed to.
You know, Spuds was actually
I want to know why, scantily clad women would never show up when I was, and the more of that I would drink, the less likely they seemed to be showing up.
Yes. Well, Spuds was actually
a... It doesn't work like the commercial, does it?
Spuds, the male...
The dog.
The male. Yeah. He was actually a she from Oak Park.
I knew it was a she dog.
Yeah.
So
what a cute little thing.
So, and since we're talking about famous animals, Morris the cat is from Hinsdale.
Really?
Yeah, but there's a little plaque. It was adopted at the Hinsdale Humane Society. A little plaque on the.
He definitely had an. He definitely had an expression. That guy, he was just pissed off at everybody.
Yeah, he did a lot of damage to cats around the world.
God.
So hey, you're talking about the car, and admittedly, and currency is one of my weaker areas, but you did. It's funny you mentioned that because I was going to try to drop this one on you as we came back from the break. I saw somebody posted on X/Twitter an inflation chart. And apparently, we're like the only place that seems to have their CPI under control. It's still not under control around the world. And somebody asked for an explanation on that. And my explanation was honesty. And I wonder if we could go back and do an analysis of economic numbers during election years and see if they just seem to be goosed a little bit more than they are in non-election years.
Well, if you ask Bush one, he would say it went the other way.
Yeah, he did well, and that, you know, that there might have been some extra goosing there.
I think that the guys that we have on the show, and you, I include you in this group, it made me look at things way more long term.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And I
most
think,
people don't.
Well, it's if you don't, I think you get kind of a dim view. And the more I look at, that's why my politics has got me smack dab in the middle, where I'm sitting there and astounded at both sides, to be honest with you. And because this constant bickering back and forth over who is at fault in this, if you look at these numbers and the fact that the CPI maybe is not as truthful as it ought to be. It goes back 20 some years, and it doesn't even matter who's president.
No, it's been a continuous issue, and one of the things is it. I talk about different ways companies can fudge numbers when I'm teaching corporate finance, which gets a lot of interest. And the problem with that is eventually the number fudging catches up with you, and I really do think we've been experiencing number fudging for a long time from the federal government. I just don't know what the eventual repercussions are when it catches up with us. If anything, it's keeping what they have to pay lower.
Because
a lot of things are indexed to CPI. And that completely stinks if you're on a fixed income in retirement and you have some expectations that Social Security is going to be helping you around that. The disconnect's so bad, everybody's going to have to move back in with their kids.
Well,
think we're seeing some of that.
Well, Russell, what is their view when you see these people make these statements, these people, the politicians, that are either an outright lie or a lie of omission? You know, they just tell you one piece of the story. Mm-hmm. If you're in a room, you're spending your whole life educating kids. You and Kevin. I mean, you guys are special.
We're trying. Yeah.
I would say if it was me, my assumption of people's mentality, I think, is probably a lot higher than politicians' view of people's mentality. There's a letter last year that they sent out for the Social Security people and the raise this year, okay? And in the letter, now for those that don't know, if you're on Medicare, okay, because I know people are on Medicare, if you're on Medicare, the hospital piece, I'll use the term, is yours for the taking at age 65, okay? You paid into it and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
There's no additional charge for that. If you want the doctor piece, there is. And if you're on Social Security, they take it right out of your Social Security. So if you're getting, $2,200 a month in Social Security, it really should be like $2,450 because they're taking $250 out for that piece of the insurance. It's not cheap, the doctor side.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to go get a supplement on top of that, it's another $250. And if you want the Medicare medicine part, which, by the way, went from 30 last year to 67 this year to 135 next year. All right, so that inflation. So your government, my government, sends out a letter to Social Security recipients last year and says, oh, by the way, your cost of living increase on Social Security is going to be, was it 3.1% or something? But the increase on the insurance is going to be like 5.5. And they put it in the same letter. And I would sit there and go, our people, especially maybe older people, are supposed to know something just because they've been around longer. How do you send that letter out and people not go, what the bleep? If inflation's over only 3.1, why is my insurance going up 5.2? And yet, I didn't hear anybody on CNBC, anybody say, look at this friggin' letter sending out. Talk about a bold-faced lie. It's right. You're admitting to it right here. I didn't hear anybody say a word on it. Did you?
No, not at all. But what you do hear people say, did you see Don Lemon randomly interviewing people in New Jersey about either who they would vote for president and why? It was a great video, and to his credit, and this may be the only time I ever say that, the majority of people said they were for Trump, and he showed it. But there's one instance, and I think this is the attitude of the decision makers versus the people that live life to life. He asked an African American woman, and she said, you know, everything costs more, and you know, I can buy less, and was, you know, explaining from the ground level, and he pulls the microphone back and he said, well, you know, statistics aren't showing what you're saying, so you might be mistaken there. Who the hell is he to tell her that? Jeez.
Well, remember the article the other day we were talking about? What's her name? With the last name Dickles. She said 59% of the people think they're not doing well or think we're in a recession. Here's where they're wrong. How do you tell somebody?
Yeah, how do you tell somebody that they're wrong? You know what? Tell me that my personal financial situation is a little stressed right now because I got one in college and another one getting ready to go.
Yeah, well, I mean,
my freaking basement flooded this summer, and you know, that just completely blew up the Rhodes household budget. I couldn't imagine. I know somebody else whose basement flooded, and they ripped everything out, and they can't afford to fix it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
because they're living check to check. You can't tell. And what is a reporter going to go? Well, you know, the statistics say that you should still be able to afford to fix that.
Well, you know, it's sort of like,
you know,
I mean, it's very similar to
life are two different things.
It's like somebody telling somebody in Chicago that the amount of shootings are slightly down over last year. It's safe. You can't coach fear out of somebody.
You can't.
I mean, you can walk along. I mean, if you and I were walking along a bike path or riding a bike, and all of a sudden some snake slithered in front of us, I can say to him, God, Russell, you know, if you jump back, and I would jump back with you, I can say, Russell,
I would guard you. Yeah, I would guard you with my life because you're a national treasure.
Oh, God. But I could say, Russell, you big dummy, don't you realize that there are no poisonous snakes in the Cook County? Actually, that's not true. There are no poisonous snakes. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I can tell you that till I'm blue in the head. The fact is, the next time you see a snake, you're going to jump back. I mean, I'm not talking about a garter snake, but I mean, you're going to say what? Because that's just the way we're programmed, right?
Exactly. It's we're mentally trained to stay away from those things. They could hurt us.
Yeah. Well, you know that from being from wherever you came from, Memphis.
Oh yeah. Oh
my.
Well,
you had real snakes down there.
We had rattlesnakes. I had rattlesnakes in the field behind my house for a while. So,
well, my buddy, you know Roy Briggs, don't you?
Yeah.
Roy, his dad died anyway. He spent a lot of time down in Nashville taking care of his mom. He's a terrific guy. Well, evidently, the old man's got a piece of property, and like, somebody's living in the house, but they haven't done anything to the grounds. I don't know how many acres it is, but he goes, Yeah, if we go back there, we got a lot of snakes, and we got some of these feral pigs, and I'm going, oops. I'm not going for a tour.
You don't want to go back there.
No, you don't want to go back. Hey, okay, you got a comment on China. You got a comment on, it seems to me, now I'm not leading the witness here, it seems mm-hmm. to me on this, one of my issues with where the market is here and what the Fed is doing. Now, I have done this, Russell, and I'm going to say for the last many months, I'm just taking the world as what it is, and these guys are now in the process of keeping this wealth bubble together. So even though I have my protection for all my clients in case we turn one day, for something happens, you know, we'll be okay. But we've actually really cut back on selling any calls against anything, and in fact, we've been kind of goosing to the upside with some like repair strategies and stuff. So the last few weeks, we have done exceptionally well because actually we had puts to the downside, mm-hmm. rolled them down, and we've made, well, we made money on the puts that we rolled down, and now on the way up, I mean, this is just within the program. I'm not speculating or anything here.
Yeah, that's exactly what the program is in place for.
And all of a sudden yeah. now we've been like a little bullish on this. But one thing I've noticed during the COVID and when the Fed really inflated the world, I don't think I've ever seen in my lifetime or even the stuff I've ever read about as good or as bad, depending on your opinion, coordination with the other central banks, where we could, you know, we
don't do that anymore.
But now
it's obvious we're not doing
well,
that.
It seems
anymore.
Like that's fallen apart a little, and you look at these dollar numbers, we've gone from 108 to 110 in the last 2 weeks against the euro. So we're putting money in the system, and I don't think they are to the same extent. They were matching for quite a while. And now they're mm-hmm. now is that a danger zone? I mean, if all of a sudden we get to, you know, 112 on the euro or 113 or and 135 on the pound, is that going to affect markets? I mean, clearly it's an interest rate gain because we drop our interest rates.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a danger if we go alone here? Because that used to be the reason why people didn't do it, because all of a sudden your currency would go down in price. It would screw everybody over that regard, and then you'd get inflation, and you end up screwing everybody over. Now, we haven't done that kind of for a while, but now is it starting to happen?
I don't think it's starting to happen yet, but I feel like, you know, at a certain point, if our currency, you're going to see a lot of international outflows if it starts to make sense at some point. And I think that'll, and then I feel like that'll start to, you know, start to work its way through the whole, you know, financial system, where our stock market starts to come under a bit of pressure, and if our stock market starts to come under a bit of pressure, that leads to extra selling. So I could see it being something that starts to create a downtrend that starts to get people worried. I would not be the least bit surprised if a big part of this rebound is through is really money coming into the United States from other parts of the world.
I think it's coming in from our Fed, but what is it in, just in terms of general stuff? Because I mean, you're used to dealing with higher end clients maybe than I am, and so forth. But when you look at a stock like Nvidia, and again, this is not any kind of, they traded 2 weeks ago Monday under $100, and now is $127.52. Mm-hmm. So let's say,
and boy, did the fundamentals change over that time period.
Yeah, and now we're talking, let's say $30. There's mm-hmm. 24 billion shares outstanding. I'm going to say that's $600+ billion in market cap from bottom to top in 2 weeks. I'm going to say 4 years ago there wasn't a company that was worth that. And this is the spread. I mean, look at Target this morning. It's up 16%.
Yeah.
I mean, really? Are they raising prices that much? Where they're, and that, I mean, I can't.
Well, I think there were some big fears with. I think a lot of people expected a bad number out of Target, and it's overreacting to. Actually, I know that's what the case was.
But how does it react
to the upside?
You're I think a student of market efficiency, and I was looking at Target yesterday, and I'm going to say the straddle was $10-$11. And we got a time spread on for 20 cents, which will be a loser here. But it's two and a third times through the straddle. All these stocks are. The market can't even price this crap. There's no. I mean, the market can't even price this stuff. It's so crazy.
It's really interesting that we've had a lot of outlier moves this earnings season. I haven't gone up. Target's kind of this week is kind of the end of the earnings season, the way that I keep up with it. And we've had a lot of I think they've been surprises to the upside, because you have concerns about what's going on in the overall economy, and then you take a look around, you know, and then you hear not so bad, I'm not going to say good news, but not so bad news out of some companies, and they just start ripping to the upside.
Well, I mean, you're talking...
And you heard an awful lot of people are not shopping at Target, they're shopping at Walmart now. I've heard a lot of that.
Yeah.
And it didn't show up in the numbers.
Well, Walmart had a bit of goose up last week on their earnings.
Yeah.
I mean, is...
And that's why.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things is, you know, you see... it's funny because I heard that apparently Walmart might be doing better than they've generally done in the past, because now you can do curbside pickup, and people that don't want to go into Walmart can still buy things at Walmart and not go in.
Ah.
Is that not the snottiest freaking thing you've ever heard in your life?
Nothing would surprise me. But I know people that say they would never even be caught in a Walmart. I mean, I don't know.
I used to get my hair cut at Walmart.
Jeez.
I'll fully admit that. There you go. I'm an open book, man.
Well, I get my hair cut out by you, because the guy used the barbershop in the SIBO moved out there, and I'm very loyal.
Yeah, I know, and you got to give me his number so I can go see him, too.
Yeah, I go on a Saturday morning, 7:30. Walk right in, walk right out.
Actually, I need you to call me when we're done. I need to talk to you about a couple things.
All right. Hey, So the other, what's the report from the Far East? You know,
From the Far East? Yeah, this is what's driving me absolutely bonkers, is all I ever hear is bad economic... Here's a new one from China that kind of slipped under the radar. One of the things with China is a lot of their economic numbers come out on Saturdays, and a lot of their announcements come out on Saturdays.
Really?
And not because of the time change, just that's the way... You know, we get, over the weekend, we get major economic numbers out of China. That's just the way that they go about doing that. I don't know if you know, their youth unemployment numbers were in the 20%. So what do you do if you're the government and you've got really bad numbers to report? You can do two things. You can lie about them, and they've been lying about them forever, or you can stop reporting them. And that's what they've done. And they just announced that they're going to, over the weekend, they announced they're going to stop reporting capital flows in and out of the country.
Really?
And that's because they're seeing net negative capital flows. And the belief is, if people, they see that number, then they start to react, and more, you know, it becomes kind of a waterfall effect. So they've decided to stop reporting if investment money is going in or out of the country, because it's going out.
Russell, what is the... we only got a couple of minutes here.
There aren't troubles there. There's not trouble there.
I'm gonna give you a 3-minute question where you probably need a whole class to talk about it. When you talk about capital leaving China, there's well, I'm going to say what I know, and you're going to tell me there's more to it than that. There's kind of the regular way to invest over there, which is actually really pretty hard to do, right? So I'd have to, mm-hmm. I mean, to take my dollars and go over and get their currency, but they also have direct dollar investments over there.
Yeah, you can. They refer to it as like a direct line from the Hong Kong exchange into China, and you know, I don't know how blurred that line is now that Hong Kong is basically part of China, but yeah, there used to be a way for foreign investors to invest in China, and I assume that it continues to be just as easy to get out, but maybe they're getting ready to make it more difficult to get your money out of there than it already is.
When you say get your money out, are we talking about a U.S. firm that maybe had a place over there, an investment over there?
Both.
That now wants...
Both.
Now he or she or they or it has to take their Chinese currency, somehow convert that into dollars, which those guys got to be watching like a hawk, and get the dollars out of there somehow. And you're saying that I thought capital flows out of there were pretty hard to do. They aren't?
They're very hard to... There's somebody that you and I both know that did a lot of business over in China before COVID. Would go over there and do classes on options and stuff. And I don't think they've ever been able, beyond covering their expenses, I don't think they've ever been able to get their money out.
Ah. Well,
I said this last week. I'll say it every week. Anybody that invests in China, if you invest in China and then you suddenly get upset because you can't get your money out, shame on you. You should know better at this point.
There's no equivalent.
It's your own damn fault.
Well, I'm not equating the two at all in terms of politics or anything, but there's no equivalent in China or Japan of a euro dollar deposit, which is a deposit in a European bank in U.S. dollars. None of those guys will do that over there, right? You got to convert everything.
Japan will, but China won't.
So there is a Japano dollar or something.
Yeah. Well, no. It's called a euro dollar. A dollar that is deposited in a bank outside of the U.S., regardless of where that bank is referred to as a euro dollar deposit.
Oh, see, I learned something every day. I thought it had to be in Europe.
Yeah, no, I know that for a fact because I teach that. When I talk about, you know, the euro dollar rates, or it's not a euro dollar rate anymore. It's a little bit different. But conversely, if you deposit yen in a U.S. bank and you're receiving interest on that, that is euro yen.
Okay. So the interest rates are going to be different.
The euro part's not necessarily continental.
Okay. So the interest rates are going to be different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, but there's no Chinese equivalent.
There's not a Chinese equivalent. Yeah, there is. You can put your money in there and they can just keep it.
But in Hong Kong, allegedly they can't, but they still sort of can. Or might be able to.
Things are changing by the day in Hong Kong. I think I talked about that when I was when I was still at SIBO, and I would go there the same week every year. And it's kind of like at the holidays, you see a nephew and you're like, holy crap, they grew 6 inches. Every year things would change and it would just become more Chinese.
Wow. You were not invited to the salt shed last night, and you were not invited to the convention?
No, it's funny, I talked to my dean yesterday and he said, you're not going downtown in Chicago this week, are you? And I was like,
absolutely not.
There's nobody down here. It's empty.
Yeah. It's a ghost town. Oh, I should have come down there.
Well, now, if you'd have gone with me in 96 with all the big honchos of the SIBO, I had a nice time.
I would prefer not to have done that.
Well, we could have hung around.
I'm not a big crowd person.
We were in the tent with Patton Boggs and Blow. Had a big tent with all the best hors d'oeuvres and booze. And then we went to Schiff Hardin, and they had a tent. Everybody had a spot.
I'm sure they did. So.
Well, Stacks and Jack should have had one, but we don't have one.
That's right. Why don't I have a press pass to the floor of the convention?
That's a problem with Andrew. He's not doing his job.
Come on, Andrew.
We can't get in the ball game either, the Super Bowl or any place. Our producers are weak.
I'll bet you we could get press passes to WNBA games as long as Caitlin Clark's not playing in it.
Probably. You remember the Three Stooges where they had the press passes? Mm-hmm. Mo and Larry go in, press, and Curly's goes, pull. And the guy goes, wait a minute, what's that? He said, pull, not press. Anyway, I'll give you a buzz. S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 38. We'll talk more tomorrow. I learned something today. I didn't know that you could put a euro dollar. It could be in a Japan bank. Well, there you go. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.